In today's episode, I'm speaking with Jonathan Sinclair, head of cybersecurity at Roche Pharma, and we'll focus on AI security in the pharma industry. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the episode number 6 of our podcast, Better Safe Than Sorry. I'm Nico Capitoni, cyber practice head at Wipro, and I'm your host for the series. As I mentioned previously, I'm invited global cyber leads to discuss about strategic topics such as trends, impact on new concepts and regulation, talent retention program, and more through one-on-one discussion. If you don't know the company, Roche is the fifth largest pharmaceutical company in the world by revenue and the leading provider of cancer treatments globally. Jonathan is a seasoned CISO, board member and advisor, having held leading positions in the breadth of organizations. His experiences across industries stretch from NGOs, finance, technology, telco, biotech to pharma, ensuring a balanced view of cybersecurity risk alongside business appreciation. Beyond enterprise threat reduction and operational excellence, he also supports charitable organizations with their cybersecurity maturity journeys, increasing AI and machine learning awareness, and advising startups negotiating early-stage development. In his spare time, he champions new space engagements and advises on lunar space policy, regulatory frameworks, and emerging developments. Jonathan, welcome to a podcast. Thank you so much for accepting my invite.
Hey, Nico. Thank you so much for inviting me. It's great to be here. Just before we go forward, I'd like to say that the views expressed here are my own and don't represent any companies I represent or any institutions.
Glad to have you. So let's get started with our first question on AI. So with AI accelerating the digitalization of the pharma industry, what's your perspective on the evolution of the industry and the role of the cyber lead in this journey?
Great question, Nico. So the way cybersecurity has grown and the way information and digitalization is permeating across all sectors of the business, the cybersecurity lead's role is increasing in importance. The reasoning for this is because we're looking at not only enterprise impact, we're also looking at lab data being digitalized. We're seeing artificial intelligence creeping into the lab to do in silico simulations, which means the cybersecurity role goes away from, okay, we're just protecting emails, we're protecting the infrastructure, we're protecting the enterprise. It's how are we protecting, you know, chemical simulations? Where are the data stores? How big are the data lakes? A lot of pharma industry cannot cope with the amount of data that they've got on-prem. So of course you're using and leveraging cloud. But if that is fueling your pipelines and fueling your drug discovery, how are you really securing that and at scale? And I think this is extremely challenging for any cybersecurity leader to deal with, because before we were talking about, okay, scale, yes, we're talking about the enterprise. We can be talking 200,000 people, 300,000 people, whatever. That's okay. But once you add data into that mix on top of that, plus your data scientists, which have a different way of working, they need more open and engaging environments, you greatly impact the complexity of the landscape that you were once looking at and having to manage.
Given the increased threat from AI, right? So what's your thought on infrastructure investment? Do you think that moving to unified platform by consolidating vendors could help you secure the journey versus the best of breed strategies?
100% agree. Unified platform for me is key. So I have some experiences in the industry. I've seen and been in companies where, you know, the financing has not been an issue. So it's like, okay, just go and get the best breed. So you go and build the best breeds. You have technology X for endpoint protection. You have technology Y for DLP. You have technology Z for, you know, cloud protection, things like this. The issue there is budgets, yes, are somehow increasing, but there's currently financial constraints in the environments. So acknowledging that is how are you delivering your ROI on cybersecurity. And for me, having been in both worlds, the best thing I can do to get the better ROI is to consolidate on a single platform. I want single panes of glass that give me all the analytics in one tool set. And honestly, I will compromise a couple of percentage points in terms of my security posture to get clearer visibility across my tool sets and landscape. If I'm having to manage my vulnerability scanner with one bit of software and one bit of data analytics and reporting, and then I'm having to put that into a pipeline where it's contextualizing my asset inventory and it's contextualizing other pieces in terms of my web profile or my web exposure, this is extremely difficult to bring together a kind of a painting or a picture of all of these and how they look like in a consolidated fashion. Now we're having vendors that are consolidating their platforms, offering considerable tech stack coverage. And this is exactly what I want. I want all the reporting in one place. I want to be able to see all my incidents in one place. I want to be able to get my data analytics so that I can present to my business in one place, just in order to create and improve operational resilience, operational performance, and help with cost control.
So let's move to data protection, right? As data protection becomes increasingly critical with AI, right? So how do you think pharma companies can ensure the protection of the right data?
It's an excellent question. And I think it's a, I don't know if I have a correct answer for it, right? Because it's so complex. It's something that the pharma industry particularly has been dealing with for a long time. How do you label your data? How do you classify it? I think everyone in the industry is now there where we say, okay, we know how to classify. We have, you know, SOPs that tell us how to do this. We have thresholds. We have many things to guide that. But when we actually see the implementation at scale, because of all the tech debt that pharma usually carries with it, and all of the heterogeneous systems across the landscape, trying to apply proper data labeling is extremely difficult. One of the few steps that I'm seeing happening is, of course, the creation of data governance offices. So this is where you have specific teams from functions to guide the business and guide system implementers on how to classify the data, to be that single resource, to provide the governance aspect around it. It's a heavy lift because you're having to switch sometimes from a systems level perspective to a data perspective. When we look back in the past, GDPR actually helped catalyze that because it started to look at data flows across your organization. And I think we can piggyback off that and those learnings to help us with the data governance aspect and to understand how we're classifying the data, etc. But it's a really, for me, it's a really unsolved problem because when you're talking about data scientists producing reams of data, you know, simulating molecules and maybe junking half the data. Okay, but was that data important for us? Should we keep it? What are the criteria for when we should get rid of it? And what about when we're doing data analytics from, let's say, infrastructure systems or IoT devices because we want to look at plant performance? We want to look at how we can improve operational resilience or operational excellence in factories. How do you then classify that data? Is it related to GXP? You know, and what does that mean? Can you pull that data out and throw it into your cloud platforms, you know, if they're not qualified environments? So there's a huge raft of complexity behind that question. At the moment, for me, what I'm seeing is you start small. You create your data governance office. You start doing proof of concepts. You start doing it in very small, isolated areas, which may have their own nuances in terms of the data governance. And then you can actually zero in on that and make it, you can actually deliver something from it rather than trying to go for the big bang approach, especially when it's big pharma and you're talking about, you know, many different functions and many different demands. So I'm afraid I can't give you a correct answer on that, but starting from the data governance, building on what you've created through GDPR, having data classification, SOPs and directives, and then trying to complement that with supporting technology is, I think, the way to go. For me, unfortunately, what I'm seeing in the marketplace is the technology is just not there. You know, you're not covering all the file formats, you're not covering all the data points. The tracking is extremely difficult. Some things in very narrow niches have got it really done well, but it just hasn't been given the attention. It's not the sexy stuff, I don't think. So it hasn't really got the attention of a lot of vendors out there to help support the businesses.
So let's move to the final question. It's probably my favorite topic all time. So about talent retention. I strongly believe that attracting talent is quite easy, right? As long as you have the right mission, the right scope and the right package. But what would be your tips to retain those talents actually along the journey?
Managing global teams, it's also something that's at the forefront of my mind. Maybe I'm a bit controversial in this, but something that two things I really want to focus on is about making a fun workplace and having a manager that's engaged. So a lot of people tell me in the industry that, you know, you need to make things interesting, you need to show career progression, you need to vary what people are doing, maybe do team rotation, etc. I think it really depends on the personality type of the people you're managing. I have known some great people who don't want to move anywhere in their career. They're super happy doing everything they can do because they're familiar with it. They know how to scale it. They have the skills in that area. And they are really absolutely security analysts that are top notch and just love to geek out doing really, you know, what we can maybe consider routine security tasks. On the other side, you still have to provide the motivation of making something fun. So I've seen this across the industry. If, you know, what attracts you in your hobbies? You know, why do you go and do a hobby? Now, there could be various reasons because you want to be successful, whatever. But I think an intrinsic reason for going to do certain things is because you find it fun. You get enjoyment from it. And if you can put that into the workplace, But again, that usually is different for different people. So of course you have a scale problem, right? So as soon as you start managing hundreds of people in your team, you can't have that one-on-one interaction to tailor what fun means for each person. But hopefully as a manager, you can instill the people who report to you and the people who report to them at the scale to focus on these things. Because as I said, I'm happy if I don't want to push somebody who feels very comfortable into a position they then feel uncomfortable in. And then they may feel insecure in telling me that, right? And I think I'm doing the best thing for them. I'm like, yeah, you know, I'm making it interesting for you. I'm rotating you into a new team. Wow. Well, if I'm an introvert, I don't want to rotate into a new team. I'm very happy with the team I'm in and things like this. So I think more care has to be made to what your employees and what your teammates need. And I don't think enough of that is done. In business, I mean, you often see people managing up far too much than managing down. But if you want to keep your talent, you manage down. So I think that's extremely important, and invigorating them and understanding what is fun, right? In my career, you know, it's almost cringeworthy. You get invited to all of these corporate events. And I talk to people who are going to them, and half the people don't want to be there. But I think if you're making that very supportive environment, they might not want to look at the apple in the first place.
That's great. That's brilliant. Yeah. Jordan, thank you so much for sharing insight, taking the time. It was a pleasure to have you on this podcast.
Thank you very much, Nico. It's been a pleasure to be here. I understand the podcast is going to go out on your social media channels. I'm also on social media. So if anyone wants to reach out and get in touch with me, I'm a firm believer in the community. So as I said, I'm always happy to help share insights. I think security is luckily it's a combined effort, right? So this means, you know, regardless of industry, I don't see any competitive nature there. It's like, hey, we're all here to share to improve the security posture across all levels of the industry. So please feel free to reach out to me if you want, if you found some of this interesting. If you found it controversial or you had any issues with it, also reach out to me. I'd be happy to take on any further conversations for anyone who's listening and is interested.
Yeah, we are all on the same boat indeed. Yeah. Thank
Absolutely.
You so much.
Thank you.
Don't forget to share, subscribe, and give us a good rating on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. We also appreciate your comments on the show. Drop us a note. Your feedback drives our improvements.